When you're the co-editor of the Journal of Adaptation in Film and Performance, senior fellow of the Higher Education Academy, and a fellow of the Royal Society of Arts, you might think, well, that's enough already. But surely when you add to that the Radio Drama Handbook, the Theatre of Joseph Conrad, Reconstructed Fictions, and, of course, the classic London's Grand Guignol and the Theatre of Horror, co-authored with Mike Wilson, then you can only say it's a semi-superhero that is working. Welcome to the show now from, of course, the fabulous Faculty of Creative Industries at the University of South Wales. It's Richard Hand. Richard, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Blushing a bit from that introduction.
It's still the important thing, because today the official launch of not only the exciting Lindsay Gold musical Delight, which we're going to hear in a few moments again, because Lindsay's in the studio. Yay! It's also the time where we can honestly say that tickets for Telefantasy and Society formally go on sale from our website, because the button can be pressed and all sorts of things, and we have, what, at least three, possibly four, five, six, maybe everybody in the studio will actually be there in all sorts of ways. Not only Sam Stone from the wonderful author that is Sam Stone, Zombies at Tiffany's, Cat in a Hot Tin Airship, and of course the upcoming
Jinxtown.
Yeah, very good. Launched at Gallifrey on Valentine's Day, Richard, if you fancy flying over to Los Angeles to be part of this initial thing.
No, that was great.
Just drop everything.
Exactly. Just say, hold it, University of South Wales people, I'm off to Los Angeles. Didn't happen, you know, but still. And we also got the fabulous David Howe from Telos Productions and Emma Tinson, Level 2 Journalism, Soul and fabulous Midvic Drivet. Yeah, exactly. And, of course, finally our English student, Christy Bond, in the studio as well. So there we have it, Richard. Have you done your homework, though? Have you managed to access some of the delightful work of Sam Stone? Would you say some of it fits into Grand Guignol material?
Absolutely. I haven't read any, unfortunately, but I've been reading some of the reviews. Yeah. It sounds terrific. It sounds exactly like my kind of thing. Yeah. So adaptation of a sort of... slightly Grand Guignol style. It sounds great.
Now, allowing for that, we're obviously looking to ensure that the radio adaptations work through, because I feel that clearly, Sam, we need to have a radio adaptation of at least the Cat Lightfoot books.
That would be very cool, so? Actually, wouldn't it? I've got a film script of Zombies at Tiffany's, an adaptation of a drama.
What do you think, Richard? Do you think it's sort of co-production? Are you know, creative and cultural industry
great.
There?
That'd be great, of course. Yeah. I mean, radio is such a wonderful form for adaptation of anything, really, isn't it? We did one a couple of years ago, which was a wonderful Victorian adventure, and it's easy to do on radio. It's wonderful.
The scenery is so much better, of course.
Of course.
Richard, would you like to share with the assembled team what you'll be speaking on at the Telefantasy and Society Conference on May the 6th at the University of Lincoln? Because, I figured just in terms of setting the scene for this, we start off with darkness with Richard Hand. No, he's just there. And we sort of emerge gradually via Fiona Moore and Alan Stevens and their sort of telefantasy scene into the light of Jamie Anderson and the Anderson sort of package for that. That's the kind of progression of the day, with obviously your good selves slot into panels and a whole variety of other bits and pieces. So it's an interesting line from that. I mean, does that make sense, Sam, in terms of the sort of system?
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a great lineup and a great fun day, to be honest.
It could be a conference, it could be a symposium, depends on the number of papers that are actually out there. So far, Christie's the only submission I've actually had. Well, that's okay. Yeah, we could spread the word, Richard, and we could always go for Plan B, which is lots of other systems from that point of view.
Just turn it into a comic con if all else fails.
The Daleks and the costumes will be there, which is always exactly so work for that. I mean, Emma, you're looking forward to Telefantasy and Society, our first ever event. Yeah, exactly.
It's very exciting.
We could even have a live performance possibly from Lindsay.
Never know.
Don't push it.
Richard, share with us what your theme is going to be for this particular
Yes, I'm going to be talking about horror adaptation in American television, in the broadest way, really. Starting by looking at American horror and fantasy radio drama, and then how that adapted onto television in the 50s and 60s, and then looking at this wonderful era we're in at the moment with American Horror Story and Bates Motel and The Walking Dead. It's a very rich time for horror on TV.
That's absolutely true. Fascinating. I mean, you could add to that things like Grimm.
Yes, yeah, and Penny Dreadful.
Yes. Yeah. There is so much out there.
I think what's interesting about them all is the way they kind of use adaptation. Obviously, Bates Motel, drawing on Psycho.
Yes.
And when I first heard about it, I thought, oh, no, don't do that.
I did too.
Actually, I've really enjoyed watching it. You know, I think it's a very postmodern. It's very playful. You know, it's not trying to negate the original or anything. You know, just build on it and have fun playing little games with it.
You're absolutely spot on with the drawing thing. I mean, Sam and I are particular fans of the adaptation of Dracula, which has not a lot to do with Dracula, but is a wonderful, glorious Victorian steampunk romp with vampires.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's it. And, you know, I think we're in a time when, you know, we're more accepting of that kind of thing anyway. And, I mean, what I like about American Horror Story is it's just built as homage. I mean, it homages and references everything. And that's, in a way, what its function is, isn't it? Is, you know, you're watching it and you think, oh, this is like that, and, oh, that's the music from such and such, and so on. And that becomes part of the pleasure of watching it is, you know, picking up on the references.
Yeah, it's very clever television, and I think it rewards people that have got that kind of background, who've watched the films, who understand the history, who've read sort of all the books and stuff. But it also rewards a casual viewer because it delivers a lot of the tropes that they would expect to see within horror fiction, and it does it very, very well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, no, that's I completely agree. And the earlier phase of my paper is just sort of building on work I've done looking at that kind of great era of radio drama in America, which was betrayed, really, with the rise of TV. I mean, the BBC, to its undying credit, carried on with radio drama, but in America it really petered out.
What are some of the series there?
Well, I'm thinking of sort of X-0, some of the science fiction things, but also shows like Lights Out and Quiet Please and the Inner Sanctum Mysteries. You know, wonderful.
Don't forget the classics of The Shadow. Who knows what evil lurks within men's hearts? Yes. The Shadow knows.
There's an awful lot of that radio drama that predates a lot of the television shows, of course, at the time.
That's right. And in a way, I think it was a wonderful time of they were kind of so adventurous with the form. So, I mean, Alex mentioning The Shadow is a really good case in point. Some of the storylines are terrific, you know, and really using the idea that the audience is not going to see anything. What can we do with absolute darkness and invisibility? And having enormous fun with that.
So do you draw into that things like the Orson Welles Radio War of the Worlds, which is probably the most classic example of not being able to see what's happening but terrifying a nation in the process?
That's right, yeah. And I think that's a terrific example because, I mean, the triumph of that show, really, was the way it used the form of radio itself, you know. And I think that's what amazed people. You know, we have to remember back then, no one had really spoofed broadcast news in the way it was doing. And so you can't blame people for thinking, you know, they hadn't heard a drama like it. So it sounds like a news broadcast.
And are you going to... Sorry, Richard, are you going to be using, like, some excerpts and things in the talks?
Yes, I'm planning to, yes. And
Checked out the location. It's the engine shed, and full technical advice and help will be actually on hand, so it should be all green-lit for you, Richard.
It's all great.
Wonderful stuff there.
I also want to see what I can do with, you know, working with sort of some of the screenplay material, and because recently I was doing a bit of work on House of Cards, you know, terrific current drama on Netflix, a new series starting soon. But getting hold of some of the screenplays is so revealing, the way the writers talk about Frank Underwood being a mix of Richard III and Hannibal Lecter, you know. That's never said on screen.
Sounds like some journalism lectures I can name, but never mind. I won't mention their names, obviously.
But you know, wonderful examples of screenplay writing where, you know, the authors are giving the sense of where they're coming from with this, and that's a real treat sometimes.
It's certainly the skill of the screenwriter, isn't it? Is when you get a screenplay and the author has sketched in just a few words exactly what they are looking for, and they're just on the nail.
That's right, and everybody else can take it and run with it.
Absolutely, then, yeah.
Christy, we'll turn to your good self because I'll say you're almost about to graduate. She's already signed up for a postgraduate course in MA in 20th First Century Literature. She had our interview this week, Christy?
I had my interview on Monday and I got my letter of acceptance today.
Oh, fantastic. Well done.
Thank you.
So any questions you'd like to put to Professor Hand from your good self, Christy? No, then. There we are, you see. They sort of, once again, the stunning quality comes across in every sense of the word. Yes. It's her first show, Richard. You've got to, you know, allow for a certain amount of, you know, the exuberance. I mean, we started off doing these siren shows back in the last century, so, you know, not everybody has that kind of, you know, immediate sort of response to the whole thing. Emma, have you got any thoughts you'd like to raise about this stage?
I just want to know how How long have you been such a creative soul? Because you're clearly very creative, and I want to know, has it come since a young age? Or
have you always been so creative, Richard?
Has it developed over time?
Well, mainly I'm an academic, but I do like to do the creative work. I mean, for me, a lot of my research, for instance, in radio drama, again, yes, I do archival research and lots of reading and textual analysis, but we also do produce shows. And for the last 10 years, you know, fairly regularly, we've done some of our own live broadcasting. Because for me, it was a way to understand how these old historical forms are working. So when we do our live broadcast, we have live musicians and sound effects and all the rest. And you, after doing that, you can really understand Orson Welles and other figures like that, what they were doing and what they were working with.
Particularly interested in Listen in Terror, British Horror Radio from the Advent of Broadcasting to the Digital Age. It's a Manchester University Press number, that. Richard, are you ready for an audio treat of unparalleled proportions?
Of course.
Well, then it's time we actually had another chance to hear Tilney. And Lindsay, would you like to just explain the backdrop to this scenario? Because I don't think Richard was able to catch the show when you gave the literature background, which I'm sure Richard, as a key literature soul, will appreciate the Northanger Abbey reference.
Of course, yeah. It's told from the perspective of Catherine Morland, who meets Henry Tilney and falls in love with him throughout the novel. It's she's about, I think, 16 in the book, and it's very, girlish, Tilney fangirling kind of thing. But I tried to make it poetic at the same time.
Are you ready to listen to the fabulous Lindsay Gold singing Tilney, Richard Hand?
Yes, yes indeed, yes, great.
Again, absolutely superlative. But, what does Richard Hand make of Lindsay Gold and Tilney?
That was beautiful. I really enjoyed that. Absolutely lovely.
And I am conscious, of course, that all our people, the correspondents who've given their view from that perspective have been listening to it down a telephone line, which is probably not the thing you actually had in mind, Lindsay. I mean, obviously, we in the studio were getting the full thing. Listen to the podcast, you'll have it in full, that'll be available. But astoundingly, Richard, this is from the Department of Absolute Shock Horror Stories. You know, 27 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock, English time, obviously, in Lincoln at least. Amazingly, that's just a demo. Is it not just a demo, Lynn?
Been properly mixed yet. I finished the vocals last Sunday.
I mean, talk about perfectionism. I mean, Richard, what are you doing? And I know, Richard, you're very keen to actually ask Lindsay, how can we support you, Lindsay? How can we actually sort of support you in terms of ensuring that you can tip the balance, because she's actually funding this whole thing herself? Richard, would you like to ask that question?
Yeah, how do we help?
Well, you can donate to my Indiegogo project, which is called... I'll just get the title for you.
There will, of course, be a chance to play this back on the podcast or listen to all sorts of
things. Lindsay to Create EP with award-winning producer, and I'll be posting a link online as well on my Twitter.
If you just search for Lindsay Gold
on Indiegogo, you can get it. You'll find it.
Lindsay Gold Indiegogo.
Yep. Fantastic.
Fantastic. So there we are. And it's nice and encouraging, isn't it, Richard, to actually sort of have the youth of the day doing such wonderful proactive projects.
Yes, of course it is. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, as opposed to hanging around pool halls and just sort of doing things on the streets, basically. I just thought the sense of you just singing around the streets of Manchester, just because you say, I mean, is this...
To get drunk and just sing.
Does Bolton not cater for you then? Do you have to head off?
Oh, I don't go out to Bolton, no. I go out to Manchester.
Oh, there we are. There's a bit of slight against the University of Bolton, but there might be.
Nothing wrong with the University. Yeah, it's just Bolton itself. Yeah.
You realise their fanzine is called Tripe and Trotters for the actual. once by a student, both Richard and Richard and myself once taught, actually. He was very. I can't remember his name offhand, Richard, but. Bolton Wanderers fanzine is called Tripe and Trotters. A bit of a bombshell, that, Richard, if you remember the whole sort of Tripe and Trotters scenario, but, you know. We like to develop it. I'm going to throw those last two questions to Christy, if she could, because she got these kind of things, and we might coach her through this, because it's all sorted through. Because she said, when I meet him on the telefantasy thing, he'd say, "Oh, you're the girl who couldn't ask me any questions." No, this stuff. You know, it's... Are you ready, Christy, for those critical ones here?
Okay. Have you enjoyed your time on Siren today?
Nice to
listen. Very much, yeah.
And I'd also like to ask you who your favourite character from The Walking Dead is.
Oh, that's a good question. Michonne. It's got to be Michonne, hasn't it?
Good choice.
There we are. It's sorted itself through in its own magical way. Richard Hand will return. He's sort of sold out and agreed with it. And, of course, you can see him in person on the east coast of England, in Lincoln, yes, on May the 6th, in the year of our Lord, 2015. Not that I want to build it up too much, Richard, but you appreciate it.
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great.
It'll be fantastic. And you get a chance to meet Sam Stone face to face. Yay! And possibly David Howe, and possibly Lindsay, and Christy, and Emma is going to be a student ambassador, and whoa! It's just the tension, you know. Exactly. Truly wonderful. Anyway, up next, over to Chilpack Hollywood Land. Of course, the wonderful Phil Leonis will be joining us from that point of view. Phil Leonis, who we were looking to see how he can get together with you guys when, of course, you're in Los Angeles next week.
Yes.
Because you are good mates with a certain Dean Hagland, who is, of course, the Chilpack Hollywood Hour co-host. Isn't that right?
Ah, yes.
You've even invited him to your wedding.
We have, yes. I don't know whether he's going to make it yet.
Who knows?
Been beat up and battered around, been sent up and I've been shot down. You're the best thing that I've ever found.
So, Lindsay, another critical on-the-spot moment here. We're not going to actually ask you to sing the introduction to Phil Leonis, as much as I'm sure he would appreciate that, but quite simply, would you go with Truth Seeker or would you go with Director? It's fairly critical. Truth Seeker or Director? What, So what choice would you actually make? Truth seeker or director?
Ooh,
only got 25 minutes, so if you can make the best decision. Fairly
give me 15 minutes. I'd say truth seeker. Sounds more interesting.
Truth seeker certainly works.
From LA to Lincoln and via sirenonline.co.uk to the world, it's time for the midweek drive to connect with investigative filmmaker and planetary truth seeker, the one, the only, Phil Leoners.
Never knowingly undersold. Katie Grimerson, I'm sorry we haven't had time to play your request as yet. We'll slip some Coldplay in tomorrow, even though she'd like to say, great show. She's been listening while sorting out details about search engine optimization in Birmingham.
Yeah.
KTG on the case, which is marvellous stuff. OK, Phil Leoners, welcome to the production. How are you? And would you like to join the sort of assembled team and maybe meet up with Sam Stone and David Howe in person when they're in Los Angeles with their good friend, a certain bloke called Dean
Hagland.
Anyway, they might deny all knowledge. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you, sir?
In the words of Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca, I never make plans that far in advance. So,
it's a wonderful show, and
I always learned something, and the penny just dropped, and when you were talking about Katie Grimson, I suddenly realized that all these advertising emails I get about SEO is search engine optimization. I never knew in all these years, I swear to you, that that's what they were talking about. I thought it was like, I don't know, some hip new band.
SEO. Exactly.
Hey, you know, Bill Coles walked into or introduced what I think very much should be one of the two concluding questions to each guest each week, which is, do you work better with alcohol or without? I think that should be the closing, one of the two closing questions.
I don't know, I thought I liked your cereal questions. I thought they were quite good as well. Do you like your cereal soggy?
Soggy, yeah. Soggy cereal.
Soggy or crunchy?
Soggy or crunchy.
Are you soggy or crunchy, Phil?
Yeah, you see, that's the question Dean Hagland would like to put to him, you see. But yeah.
Wait a minute. Because I know that you work in publishing, I can only assume that that is a euphemism of the highest order.
Not at all, Phil, not at all. It's a milky cereal question.
It's even worse.
You're not making it sound any less ribald.
But hey, you have some fantastic cereals down there. We were over in Long Island, in fact, for Halloween, and we brought back a box of cereal, Boo Berry Crunch.
Yeah, I got that for Christmas. It's really good.
That's all she got as well. That was it.
Yeah, so I cried into it.
I am a steel cut oats man.
Ah,
that's it. That's it. Bowl of steel cut oats every morning.
But do you have it with salt or with sugar?
No additives.
You're listening to Cereal of the Day here on the Siren 107.3. A whole new version of taking the notion of cereals and actually getting to serial killers. But there we are. Life continues.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I don't have any additive, unless, of course, you count my coffee, which is 3 shots of espresso and 1 shot of water.
Ooh, there we are. That's strong.
It's to keep him awake for the midweek drive. I mean, after all, it is coming up to 2011.
I only have 3 of those, though. I only have 3 cups of that. So, you know, I've cut back to the 9 shots of espresso. Hey, so much to talk about on today's midweek drive, Alex. An excellent show.
Well, you say that so surprisingly, Phil.
Isn't every week excellent?
Thank you, Emma. Exactly.
I think it is.
Yeah, there we are. In its own way.
Can I put this Game of Thrones issue? I can't even believe that this was an issue. Is it science fiction or is it fantasy? Science fiction, technically, to be science fiction, needs to rely on scientific principles to underlie the entire fictional construct. Mm-hmm. That without the scientific principles, the storytelling, the narrative construct would not exist. So, therefore, by definition, it is not science fiction. Further, this is why, for example, Star Wars is considered science fantasy, whereas Star Trek is considered science fiction, and whereas the new Wachowskis film Jupiter Ascending
what you mean, Phil. Don't hold back.
Yeah.
Well, I say I would love. I mean,
And to think it was this morning I decided to start off by driving in from Carlton Moorland to Lincoln by listening to 30 minutes of Chilpack Hollywood's 82-minute special on their top movie lists, etc. And Phil talks about Jean-Luc Godard for 10 minutes.
Fantastic.
On and on and on about his notion about the end of language and so on. And I just thought, you know, surely there was a classic line, Jean-Luc Godard, 84, and he's come up with a movie. But then so has Clint Eastwood, American Sniper. And yet that didn't seem to be on the list. Astonishingly, never mind.
So, yeah. Phil, can I just ask, just to put your comment about Jupiter Ascending, is it, into context? What's your view on the Matrix films then?
The Matrix films? I don't think there should be an S after that.
Oh, please,
there
Phil.
Was the Matrix. There was the Matrix film, and then two craven attempts to just keep sucking blood out of the marrow.
Right.
Of something that's no longer alive. So that's what I would say kindly about it.
But the original film.
You know, and this, the original film was great. The original film was transcendent. And, you know, Dean Haglund, of whom you may have heard reference earlier in the show.
Of this parish.
He's always maintained that he really believed that the filmmakers didn't understand what made that first one resonate so deeply with audiences. And so when they tried to replicate it, they didn't even know what they were doing. And this sounds like an insult towards the storytellers, but it isn't, because as we all know, the greatest part of ourselves that we access when we're creating art is unconscious.
And
this is the problem with so often trying to continue something that's a commercial property without being driven by a need to tell the story. Rather, it's a commercial need that drives the entire enterprise and the entire expression. Mm. And most of the time, that's going to be really, really difficult.
Yeah.
Whereas the first episode, this was something clearly they were passionately driven to tell.
Yeah.
And I think this ties in with so much of the conversation that's gone on over during this show. You know, the question of Richard, like, how long has he been creative? Has he always been this creative? I think everyone's born creative, and I think everyone's born creative the same way. I spend a lot of time with young children, and they are these balls of energy going in 360 degrees at all times. All the capability for creativity is there. It's just as we get older, we focus. We have choices made for us sometimes, and we lose sight of all the creative potential that's within us. And I think if nothing else, that's what makes the arts and storytelling sacred. There are other reasons, but I think it's to remind people that we are all creative beings. We're not necessarily all artists. We're not necessarily all geniuses, but we are all creative. And at a time when we're constantly seemingly confronted by complex and oftentimes seemingly insoluble problems, if we could be reminded that, we have the creativity to approach our daily lives, our daily challenges in new ways and find new approaches, that would make, that alone would make all of storytelling and artistry a worthwhile role model for the rest of us.
Sam, do you agree with that?
Yeah, it's a really good point.
There we are. How can people actually see you in person in Lincoln in March?
I'm going to be in Linden Books.
That's up the hill, of course.
It is up the hill. So, hopefully a lot of people will come to see me. That's at 1 till 2 on the 7th of March. And we'll be doing sort of a sort of launch of Jinxtown.
It'll be more than just a sort of launch. It'll be even more wonderful. I mean, I can actually even show you Jill Hart there from Linden Books holding a William Gibson thing. There we are, Linden Books.
Oh, wow.
There's Jill, there's Sasha doing the whole system there. That's where wonderful people, lovely
they are
people.
Very.
And as I say, a chance to actually meet you in person. Once again, the date is?
The 7th of March, 1 till 2 o'clock.
Did you get that, Phil?
And that's not one in the morning, that's one in the afternoon,
one
just in case
anybody
gets confused.
Because easily done, they could be queuing outside. Phil, I'm going to set you a challenge for next week's Chilpack Hollywood Hour. You must ask Dean Haglund live on air, is he going to attend the wedding of Sam Stone and David Howe? Because I think it's important that the public know.
If I could find where you've hidden the secret camera and knew that while Sam was explaining where she would be in March, how you knew that I was literally writing that note down.
Yeah. Well, in the same way as Penny Evans has just said, Phil, you sound just like Mike Dooley there. She's marvellous. There we are, another one of our good friends there. You're channeling your Dooley nature. Marvellous. Anyway, still, it's still your show before we actually head into a completely different format after 7 o'clock with, of course, Mr. Wiley and more Siren Lifestyle. Whom do you wish to go to now? I mean, possibly the legend that is going to be Lindsay Gold. Not that I want to point you in any direction, Phil.
Possibly. But how long do I get to answer the question? 15 minutes?
Just take it at your own speed, Phil. You know, we like a bit of pause.
Okay. Lindsay, how about we continue this question of creativity? At what point did you know that music, that singing, that songwriting was going to be something that you would pursue so seriously that you would literally put your own money into it, you know, dedicate all your time and your efforts to making it happen? At what point in your life did you know that this was going to be the path you were going to pursue?
Well, it started long ago when I was a young Linz, and I was 6 years old singing along to Sarah Brightman, Phantom of the Opera, and my mum heard me and got me singing lessons. And from then we sort of, you know, she always put me forward for things. I did a bit of acting as well and modelling as a kid. And it sort of did fall a bit.
Children say the craziest things.
She was on that.
I was on that. I sort of fell by the wayside around the time I was 15, 16 because art took over and I went into an illustration course, but I still kept singing. And then I sort of, you know, all these things happened with Alan Whitehead managing me, and they said, you know, why not try writing your own song lyrics? And I'd never thought of doing that before, but I used to sometimes write parodies to songs already made. So I knew I sort of had a knack for that. And I gave it a shot, and it went pretty well. So
Can I just interject here that Alan Whitehead gave me permission to say this online, actually, that the producer that she's working with, Alan Glass, who's a multi award-winning record producer, has actually said to him that he believes that Alan has taken on Lindsay, and she's very, very special. And I don't mean that in a special sense. She is incredibly special, and she's very gifted, and you know, me proud mum, I'd like to put that in there.
I think that this,
how cute.
Shut up.
Very, very important.
Making me embarrassed.
Julia allowed to actually work on that basis. Anyway,
I'm very glad that I asked that question, because you know, so much of this show has been about creativity, and in the discussion about all the different horror works that are on television right now, I actually found myself really reminded of the conversation and something that Dean Haglin said on our show this week, where, let's see if I can translate this politely, he was referencing how almost all of popular culture right now seems to reflect that the snake has eaten its own tail long ago, has expelled itself, and has eaten that, because everything is a reference or an homage to something else. And what I love about hearing Lindsay is she began by writing parodies. She began by referencing other works, by paying homage. And now you hear what she's starting to do, and it is completely unique. It is original. It is not only her voice, but it is her own inner voice that could be no one else. And that's the thing that gets me down sometimes, is I see so much, you know, the words clever television were uttered on this show. Boy, those words just make me shudder. I'm done with cleverness. I'm done with modernism, postmodernism, deconstructionism. I want creativity. I want people showing their own original uniqueness. And sometimes I get down wondering, well, if it's not these really talented professionals doing it, bearing their souls, revealing themselves, who's it going to be? Oh, right, it's going to be Lindsay. It's going to be that generation. And that's what gives me hope and why I continue to mentor young people.
I mean, I'd like to include Emma and Christy as well in this, because they're not too far a distance in terms of ages, unless, of course, Emma's secret life as a 142-year-old soul has actually sort of not been revealed as yet.
I could mention Lindsay because she answered the question.
Exactly. And like it. Christy, any questions you want to put to Phil Dearness?
No.
There we are. You see, she's got it.
Spot on. I haven't been able to hear this conversation.
Actually, to be fair, that's absolutely right, because I just realised
that's the original creative voice at work that I was looking for.
And I have to say, she's absolutely right, because she didn't have a set of headphones, so she only got the last bits of it when I actually opened it up through loudspeakers. It's okay, Christy, we're on your side. Emma.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, Phil, how's life in LA and what have you been working on recently?
Colour separation, colour processors, lady killers, killers.
It is, I feel like we're every bit as far away from conclusion as we were 1 week ago. We were about 2 weeks from conclusion a week ago. We're still 2 weeks from conclusion. What I've been working on, I have not slept but one night out of the last five. And it's, the more technology offers us possibilities, I do believe the greater democracy of artistic expression is possible. It also, every single project, when you get to the final stages, becomes a technological nightmare. There's always problems or challenges in every stage of finishing a production now. And so that's where we're at right now, is trying to navigate through codec errors and through the need to reconform files
I empathize so much, because I mean, during this very show the computer collapsed halfway through. I had to keep going. Nobody actually knew it. Oh no, I've revealed it now. It's all right, we're okay. It's you. Oh, there we are. Sometimes you just think, what's going to go on? Anyway, life continues, or as we might well say, the play's the thing wherein we'll catch the what's the missing word, Phil? The play is the thing wherein we'll catch thee. It's a quote from, you know, lady who actually appeared on Ironside, but also appeared in this particular thing. Have you got that little reference? The play.
Wait a minute. It was a quote from her. I thought it was a quote from Hervé Villechaize.
Sorry? A quote? No.
It sounded like you were doing, what would Mr. Works? Sidekick on Fantasy Island.
I thought the play, the
book.
The play.
Knick-knack,
or whatever his name
is. It isn't knick-knack. I was hoping you'd immediately sort of go. It featured Kevin Reilly, this particular episode of the classic series, Phil.
Oh, so it's the naked time, but...
No, it's
right?
Not. It isn't, Phil. I'm disappointed. You've let our Trek colleagues down on this one.
What was the other one?
The conscience of the
king.
Lindsay, would you like to...
When you do an Hervé Villechaize impression, how can you expect me to focus on that?
Very true.
Okay.
Very true.
Lindsay, would you like to give me a number between 2 and 27, please?
Sure. Don't go, Lindsay.
How about 54?
No, 2 and 27.
2 and 27. I thought you said 77. Oh, God.
54 is nice, but between 2 and 27.
All right. Well, then I'll go for 21.
27 twice. So just
go
27 twice.
No, that's... Do you want 27?
No, she said 21.
21. She said 21. 21. That's a good choice, actually. A very good choice. I think you'll find it. It's the universe thoughts.
To set the record straight, however cool you think it might be to have an out-of-body experience floating over your house, flying through space, traversing the past, present, and future, let me tell you, it'll never be as cool as being in the one you now have. Walking barefoot in the grass, floating on the sun-drenched pool, or dancing alone in the dark. You so fly the universe. Trust me, from here, getting into body is considered the most sacred of all sacreds.
That's very apt, really, in many ways. You know, into body, out of body. You know, many people have said that the best way to listen to the Midweek Drive is being out of your head. But anyway, that's another line. I mean, I trust you appreciated that particular one, Phil. So there we are. So it's time to wrap up, astoundingly. Emma, would you like to ask those two questions to Phil Lianis, please?
Of course. Phil, have you had a reasonably good telephonic link with us today?
Actually, yes, I do work better with alcohol.
Come on, I'm trying to be professional.
Keep going, Emma. That's very good.
And do you like your cereal soggy?
I like it hot and crunchy.
There we are. Nice. Right, okay, euphemisms will come across.
probably
more with Sarah Cox. Guys, listening to this on a line in Los Angeles, Gallifrey, it's a Doctor Who convention. You're going to be there. Talk to us about how people can get in touch with you whilst you're there. What's the sort of movement, David?
Well, we're kind of going out, Nick, this coming weekend. Right. We're spending a week in LA just before the big Gallifrey convention. Unfortunately, Gallifrey is such a popular Doctor Who convention these
Phil
days.
Phil doesn't get Doctor Who. He's tried several times.
Cool.
He doesn't get it
that's
at all.
That's cool. There we are. But it actually sold out within about 40 minutes of the tickets going on sale last year. So it's completely sold out. So you can't get tickets. You can't get in.
He'll just have to meet you outside, though.
Well, you know, they could sort of, you know, rock up and see us there or something. But
Lobby
if you're going, it will be lovely to see everybody
and
out there.
Don't forget, Phil, to ask Cameron. Cameron, he's very confused with the
who's
names
Cameron?
These days. Yeah, who's Cameron? Dean. You know, what is he going to attend? We need to know. Thanks to Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, William Coles, Rachel Warren, Professor Richard J. Hand, and of course Phil Leonis. And in the studio, Lindsay, have you enjoyed the show?
Yes, I have. Thank you. It's been fun.
That's okay. That's nice. Sam, how have you been?
I certainly have, but I think I might have to and ha a little bit about that just to go in the theme make Kirsty Christie.
Have you enjoyed the show, David? Your first 2-hour special?
I've had an absolute blast.
You realise that even Alan brilliant. Stevens and Fiona Moore haven't done a full 2-hour show.
I'm very honoured. I'm very, very honoured. Wow. It's been tremendous, Alex. Thank you so much for having us. It's been brilliant.
And Christy, have you enjoyed the time even without headphones?
I have, and I'm going to bring my tongue next week, and it's not going to be tied up.
Yeah, you see, it all fit together. We're going out with a band called Marmalade, Falling Apart at the Seams. I thought this might be appropriate in the whole range of things.
Yeah,
you think so?
Yeah,
marvellous stuff. Emma, back tomorrow morning, 8 a.m.
Of course.
Midnight Los Angeles time, Sarah Cox on the show, plus a whole heap of other fine folk, including Richard Fitzwilliams and his predictions for the BAFTA Awards and a whole heap of other things as well. That's it from Emma Tinson, Sam Stone, Lindsay Gill, David Howe, Christy Bond, Phil Dienis, et al. On the Midweek Drive, can we say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.